Hey, good morning. Thanks for downloading the show. I'm guessing that you're driving to work and you're listening to Garden Fork Radio. If I'm wrong, let me know. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. I'd love to hear from you if you could tell me where it is you listen to the show. So, and if you're a first time, this is your first time here, Garden Fork is this eclectic DIY show. It's me and my friends talking about interesting things. And if you've been here before, then you could skip this part. But Aaron from The Impatient Gardener is here, and we're going to talk about raised beds and whatever else pops into our heads. So good morning.
Morning.
We're doing an early morning show before you even go to work.
Right. That's unusual. So this morning I'm drinking coffee. Normally when we talk, I'm drinking wine, but I'm on coffee this morning.
And there's a blue jay out your window.
Yes, there are some blue jays out there. There's lots of birds out there.
I have the window open here in Brooklyn, too, so you might hear more less natural sounds, let's just call them.
If the natural sounds here get too loud, let me know and I'll close up the windows.
I kind of like it as a background thing.
Good. Good. It sounds very naturey.
To go along with our nature show.
Right.
So you, if anyone is new to here, The Impatient Gardener, which is Aaron, is kind of like how we all should garden and we don't. And I've been following you on Instagram and Facebook, and also the really great posts on your website about the progression of building your raised beds, which are, they look like they could be nuclear missile silos compared to my raised beds, which are simply some 2x12s that I nailed together with angle iron. So how and why?
So, this new raised bed vegetable garden that we did has been stewing in my head for several years now. And we had had a really nice raised bed vegetable garden. We built that in 2009. And it was all sort of enclosed in deer nettings because we've always got to protect things from deer around here. And that was great. And we built that. And for about 5 years, that was great. And then I ran out of space. So I added another more typical raised bed outside of it to plant things that I knew the deer wouldn't bother. And then I ran out of room there and I planted another one. And then there was just still things that I couldn't, like I always really wanted to grow garlic, but because garlic, you plant that in fall and you don't harvest it until you're well into the next growing season. I felt like I didn't have space to dedicate to things like that. And I wanted to grow potatoes. So I've been wanting a little bit more room for a while, and when the other original raised beds sort of had served its purpose and rotted rather significantly, we decided to just go for this rather grand plan. And I have to tell you, I feel like everything I've been doing this keeps sticking in my head, is sort of the antithesis of the Garden Fork ethos of done is better than perfect.
Just a little.
Because I have really been nitpicking this project, and it shows because we're now nearing about 3/4 of the way through June, and I just planted my stuff. So that's what happens when you worry a little bit more about the perfect part and less about the done part. You end up planting things very late.
And then your neighbors point that out to you.
Oh, my God. They're getting – I mean, this raised bed garden is on a portion of our property that it actually doesn't even feel like our property because we've got kind of this little creek that runs through, and it's on the other side of that. And it's right next to the road. So every time we've been out there working on this, the neighbors are stopping by and they're starting to get more and more and more sort of anxious about what is happening with this project. And are you even going to grow anything in it this year? And 2 weeks ago, I was like, all right, people, just calm down. There's going to be some vegetables, I promise.
That kind of reminds me of two different things. Eric from Root Simple, the Root Simple podcast and website, he lives on a hill, and as you've seen these really steep hills where they have houses, the garage is right there at sidewalk level, and Eric has turned half the garage into a shop. And so when he's working in the shop, he has the door open right to the sidewalk. So it's more like West Coast Eric's social bar, you know, rather than a wood shop. And Curtis Stone, who has a very successful YouTube channel about being a market gardener, he lives in this suburban area of Western Canada, and he changed his front yard into a vegetable garden. and the neighbors always stop by, you'd think they'd be mad, but I think 95% of them love it, and then there's the 5% that scowl at them. But it's just interesting, if you move your life closer to the road, how much more you interact with your neighbors.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, we're in a very friendly neighborhood where we always wave when someone drives by, but people are actually stopping their cars. And then I found out, of course, that while my husband was, he did the majority of the building on this, which was awfully nice of him. While he was working on these projects while I was gone during the day and the neighbors would stop by, I found out later on that he's been promising the neighbors vegetables, including he told some of them, just come on in and grab whatever you want. I'm like, oh, no.
No.
No, I'm happy to share, but I'm going to do the picking because I'm getting the best tomato.
Oh, that went very wrong for one of my neighbors upstate, actually. So,
yeah, I can see how that might go wrong. Yeah,
one of the neighbors came and helped themselves to almost everything, and was oblivious to what they were doing. So,
oh yeah, that's awkward.
Yeah, don't offer that.
Right. Right. No, I actually do. I mean, I don't know how this year is going to go, given that we've planted so late. I'm just going to play it by ear, which is kind of what you do anyways when you garden. But, you know, I do have intentions of at some point, I'll set up a little table out there by the road and just say, you know, set out some stuff on it and put a little sign there, neighbors, grab what you want, or send everybody an email and just say, hey, there's some stuff on the table, come grab what you want if people want that. And the rest of it I'll take to work or the food pantry. And I mean, at some point, hopefully I'll have a productive enough garden to be able to share in great quantities.
That's a great point about the food pantry. I don't know if people realize that, but like when I go to Costco, I buy extra stuff. Like I buy canned salmon and canned tuna and peanut butter and almond butter and things for the food pantry. And you can also contribute fresh food to the food pantry as well. So, I mean, maybe not the giant bushel of zucchini, but, you know, tomatoes and other things as well. Just don't dump all your squash on them.
Right. And they're so happy to have it too, because, you know, really, you know, they often do very well on non-perishables, but they, you know, they have to spend a lot of money on perishable food, and the food pantry is really happy when they don't have to take some of the donations they get to buy perishable food. And people are so appreciative of it because it's delicious. We all love it. So
my neighbors have a garden cart. Their garden is way up in their property, and along they pick stuff and they put it on a little, it's a cute little cart. And it just has pay what you want. First they start out, so just, you know, make a donation, and they found that people would take almost everything and then put a dollar in the can. Oh. And they were all mad. And I'm like, you said, pay what you want. You know, I said, you've got to throw some prices on here or you're going to drive yourselves crazy. So they, if you expect people to pay, you should tell them what you expect them to pay, is my advice.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. So anyways, we have been working on these beds for, you know, conceptually for years. We didn't actually start this project until this spring, primarily because, honestly, we just needed to save up some money to do it. Because my theory on this is that I'm one of those people, I often like to just wait until I can build or buy or do the thing that I really want to do instead of settling for sort of a half measure. Mm-hmm. So we started, I don't even know how long ago we started. I feel like we've been working on this thing forever, but it was probably a couple months ago. I had a landscaping company come in and just level the whole site for us. Just because, and I knew we could run some machinery to do that, but I knew we had a big project ahead of us in building these things. So we had that all leveled. And the construction method we used for these beds is all with 4x4s. And I went with that because, one, I had seen that in other places and really just liked the look of it. But two, I knew we'd be facing some, you know, obviously you're just kind of dealing with time as far as how long it takes for a raised bed to sort of rot. And of course that depends on weather and what kind of wood you use and all those things. But I thought thicker was better, you know, and last time we used 2x10 boards or whatever. And after 9 years, they were probably half gone in some cases and completely rotten in other places. So I figured we'd buy ourselves a little bit more time using the 4x4s. And I like the look. So that's why we went with that. And then, so we, these beds are 6 4x4s tall, which ends up being about 21 inches tall. And that was sort of a, the decision on how high to go was kind of a balance in the height that I'd really like versus how much it costs to build that height.
Yeah.
So of course, because of course, the taller it is, the more wood and the more soil you need to fill that up with. Our old beds were actually 30 inches tall, which was a fabulous height. I loved that height, but they were only 30 inches deep as well. So there was no problem reaching across them. That was not an issue. And that was a fabulous height. I loved everything about it. But for a typical 4x8 size bed, which is what most of our beds are, that might be a little high in order to reach all the way across. And plus, again, more soil, more wood. So we ended up at 21 inches high, and we staggered all the joints. And, you know, the first course was by far the hardest, because everything had to be leveled and set in exactly the spot we wanted it to be, because we knew, like almost any project, that first course that you do, whether you're tiling or if it's prepping for paint or whatever, if you don't get that first bit right, then everything else gets exponentially more wrong as you go into the project.
Yeah, I just I helped a buddy shingle a roof, and the first course took forever because I knew if we didn't do that one right, it would look crooked.
Yeah, exactly. And so all you have to do, you probably spend maybe as much time, or not quite as much, but a far greater amount of time on that first course of whatever you're doing than you do on really the rest of the project, because the rest of it is just kind of a no-brainer. It's just repeating steps after that. So that was challenging and a little frustrating, because, you know, nothing is ever really, you know, even though we had this area leveled, that's obviously a rough level. So there was a lot of that. And then a lot of the fill they brought in to level the area got like rock hard. Mm-hmm. So because it got very dry in the middle of this project, so it got like rock hard. So we were like trying to dig up to loosen up the soil to level it, whatever. It was an exercise in marriage frustration, but we got through it.
So the first course, I think, did you use a treated wood the first course and then pine the rest of them?
Yeah, we actually went with cedar for the first course.
Okay.
And then we did pine for the rest of them. And then all of it, so the bottom of the cedar that would be touching the ground, and then the inside of the pine boxes, we treated all of that with a non-toxic sealer that I found. It was hard to find something. But we treated all of those with, it's actually a penetrating wood sealer.
And you wrote about that on your site. It was very interesting.
Yeah, it did. And I talked at length with this company. Their name is, it's Timber Pro UV is the name of the company. They're out in Portland. And full disclosure here, they sent me the sealer to try, and which was very nice of them. So I'm trying that out. But of course, as I put in my blog post, I'll let you know in like 8 years how it worked out. Because really, really, I mean, it went on great and it looked great. And you could tell that it was penetrating the wood, because on the ends you could see that it had, you know, had soaked in. But, you know, I can't tell you how it's going to work for a while, because everything looks great in for the first few years. So, but we sealed that. So we sealed the bottom. And the reason we went with cedar on the bottom, obviously we would have done cedar for the entire raised bed if we could have. But cedar 4x4s were exponentially more expensive. We ended up actually, so our cedar 4x4s, we paid $22 a 4x4 at a big box store. They were actually $50 for a 4x4 at the lumber, at the small lumber place that we got the rest of the wood from.
Right.
So we went to the big box store for the cedar, and then all the rest of the lumber we used untreated pine for the rest of the lumber, and that we all got from the local lumber yard, and they were so great. They selected fabulous. We never could have gotten as nice a 4x4s as we would have gotten if we had gone to a big box store, where we also would have had to spend the time choosing them ourselves, which takes a lot of time actually. So they were all nice and straight. They had no terrible knots in them. It was really nice lumber that we got from them.
Yeah. At the big box store, the lumber can be really beat up. That's something to think about, because the local lumber yard, they're going to work with you. I like that.
And it was great. They delivered it for free. They packed it all up on pallets, covered it up with a tarp, packed it all up and dropped it off our driveway. And all we paid for was the actual lumber cost, no packing charges or delivery charges or anything like that. So that was, I was so happy we went that direction. That was good. But we went with untreated pine. I know that a lot of people always question about that. And, you know, there are a lot of sources out there that will tell you that today's treated pine is just fine to use in raised beds. So I think that's a decision that everybody has to kind of just look into and decide if they're comfortable with that or not. And for us, I wasn't really comfortable with that. And I can't give you any scientific reason for that. It's just sort of a decision I made. So there are many sources that will tell you it's okay to use treated pine in your raised beds.
One of those being Garden Fork.
One of those being Garden Fork. Yeah, I mean, there's, it's not, treated wood is not the same arsenic treated wood that it was, what was that, 15 years ago or 20 years ago now.
Right.
So it's a different animal now. So it's just a personal decision that I made. And it's one of those things that I think everybody has to just kind of decide where their comfort level is with that.
Well, what's very interesting is I like this idea of this penetrating sealer that you got, because I'm actually going to put my rhubarb in a raised bed this summer. And pressure treated wood, which is treated with copper, which is an organic fungicide, is quite a bit more expensive than regular old 2x12s, you know? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I could get the regular 2x12s and buy a quart or a gallon of this spray. And I'm sure I could use the spray for other things as well. So
yeah,
I think using untreated wood with the spray would be quite good.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would be really cool. It'd be great to do a long-term experiment, build, you know, two beds, or, you know, one with pressure treated and one with this penetrating sealer, and see down the road how they last. I don't know who's in for that long of a experiment, but it would be interesting to do a side-by-side comparison. Like I said, I talked to these people fairly extensively on the phone, and they were very nice and had a ton of really fabulous information. But, you know, they basically invented this product, developed this product in conjunction with other companies years ago, because they didn't really want to expose themselves or their employees to the ongoing chemicals that are in some other sealers and things. So it was originally created for decks and siding and stuff like that, where people wanted to leave their siding natural. And it's sort of has worked its way down to be very popular for raised beds and chicken coops and things like that.
It's called Timber Pro UV, and it's their internal wood stabilizer.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. I'll link to that in the show notes. And, you know, it's and you wrote about that on the site there. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So then where did you get the garden soil from?
I went to a local nursery and asked them, because a lot of local nurseries, and again, this is a independent garden nursery, not a big one. A lot of them, because raised bed gardening is becoming so popular, have a specific raised bed garden mix.
Oh.
And so I called somebody for this raised bed garden mix, and I got the ingredients of it. And I don't remember the percent breakdown anymore, but it was composted topsoil, peat, sand, manure, composted manure, and maybe that's it. There might be one other thing in there. And so it sounded like a pretty good mix. And I actually just earlier this week grabbed a sample from it and sent it off to the state to get a soil sample on it, just to see. It's always good to, I think, even though this is a good bed and I probably won't do anything to amend this year, it's a good idea to see where it's at in terms of acidity level and all the nutrients and everything, so I can know for future years what I should be doing. It was extremely pricey stuff.
Uh-huh.
It was $50 a yard, which is topsoil in this area costs about, your plain topsoil around here costs about $24 a yard, and a compost, if you buy just a compost, is generally $38 a yard. And my alternative was to buy a screen topsoil, which probably is $28 a yard, and mix that with compost. That was the other thing I was thinking about doing. Buy equal parts of that and yep. do half and half, and then add some manure and some other stuff. And to be honest with you, as this project has gone on, I have really started to look for ways to save time on this. In the interest of time is money, and more than anything at this point in time, was sanity.
Yeah.
And I just thought this idea of hand mixing all this stuff, I thought, forget it, dump it. And I filled those beds up all the way. You technically wouldn't have to do that. You could fill the bottom of those beds with organic material, which is what I did with our very first raised bed garden. I filled it up with branches and leaves and anything organic they could find. And all of that, by the time I took those beds apart 9 years later, was completely gone. It was all broken down into soil. And I could have done that, but again, I thought, my gosh, why am I going to hassle with that? The other problem with filling the bottom of beds with organic matter is that it does break down rather quickly and your soil level sinks rapidly.
Yeah.
And so every year I was adding a lot of soil onto the top of those beds for the first few years of those beds. So I thought, just fill them up to the top with this time, take the hit on the cost this one time. And I had gone in expecting the soil to be the single biggest expense involved in this. It wasn't. The lumber was more expensive. But I was well prepared to just buy really good soil from the get-go and go that way. You know, one of the things I've been doing in my posts about these beds is at the end of every post, I've been talking about if you don't want to go quite to the degree I went to, because I recognize that this is not your typical raised bed garden. And I don't want anyone reading this to think like, oh my God, you have to do all this if you want to do raised beds. So I've been trying to, like, if you don't want to do it to this extent because of time or money or space or whatever, here are some alternatives to do this more cheaply and more quickly.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I just had to drop some pine trees and I basically have to take the logs, you know, the trunk and I cut it up and I have to drag it into the woods and I just let it rot back there. But you could take pine and just fill the bottom of a bed, kind of like a hugel culture kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's got me thinking. I could ship you all the red pine I just had to cut down.
Okay, that'd be great.
So it's not there yet, but there's going to be a deer fence?
Yes, right now we have posts with string tied around it because the deer will not go through the string. And I suppose they could jump over. I'll just have to see how it works. But it's the best I can do for now. The next step in this process is we're running irrigation to all the beds. I'm going to hook up all automatic watering on this so that I don't have to. I mean, otherwise, if we go out of town for like a week, I always hire someone to live at the house and take care of the dogs and the house and everything. But I also, a lot of times, I want those people focusing on taking care of the animals that live in the house and they aren't necessarily gardeners. I often end up hiring a second person to come over and take care of the gardens. And hiring is a loose thing. Sometimes I don't pay them and I go over to their garden. You know, we do a garden swap.
Right.
Or I buy them some fudge from Mackinac Island or something as a thank you. But I just want these beds to kind of manage themselves when I'm out of town. And frankly, for me too, because I don't have time to go water all these raised beds every single night. So we're hooking up drip irrigation in all the beds. So the first thing that has to happen is all of that soil that we brought in to level the beds, believe it or not, we have to dig that all out between all the beds down about 5, maybe 6 inches, somewhere in there. Then we're going to run all the drip irrigation stuff under there. Then we're going to bring in some, here they call them limestone screening. Sometimes they call them paver base or road base. It's just really compacted. Here it's always limestone, but a stone that, and it's what you might set if you were making like a brick patio or something. It's the same type of thing you can set on that. We're going to bring that in, compact that, and then on top of that, we're doing gravel. I have discovered that I hate landscape fabric more than anything in the world.
Uh-huh.
And I have tried to put gravel paths over landscape fabric before, and that is great for about 2 years, and then you want to move. It's so bad because the weeds always get through that fabric. So by doing this paver base, one, it inhibits weeds. Weeds are less likely to grow in there for a while anyways. And two, it's much easier to pull them out, spray. If you choose to use a spray, you can spray them easily. Or my preferred method is propane torch. I like to burn my weeds out. And that works really well on gravel paths.
Oh, perfect.
So that's what's next. So I'm not going to put a fence up until all that gravel work is done, because obviously it's a lot easier to access everything if you don't have to go through just two ends of a fence.
So will you use soaker hoses in the beds or drip emitters? Or
I'm doing drip emitters. Actually, Scott Gillespie, Garden Fork regular, and was he an agronomist?
Agronomist, yeah, the Canadian agronomist.
Yeah, he and I have been in, he's helped me a ton, actually, in figuring out what to do for the drip irrigation. So he and I have been going back, and I have all the parts now, and he was extremely helpful in helping me figure out what I needed to do for that. So that's going in. I've got part of the stuff run in the beds already, but obviously the main line is not hooked up yet. So it's all going to be drip emitters. Which I'm looking forward to. I hope that works. I'm sure it'll take a little bit to sort of dial it in to get it all right. But it's the first time I've ever done that. And since I was ordering all the drip irrigation parts, I ordered some extra for a couple other beds in my garden. I have a bed right along the patio that's kind of under the eave, so it never gets any water. And I ran some half-inch drip emitter tubing there. And then I also ran somewhere I recently planted 6 horn beams along the edge of our property. I hooked all those up on drip irrigation too, because I'm trying to be – I think a big reason why I lost a lot of plants last year was inconsistent watering. And so I don't want to do that again with plants that I've spent a lot of money on.
Cool. Yeah, so. Scott Gillespie, he's also one of our Patreon patrons as well. So not only is he giving us all sorts of information, he gives us money. So that was very nice.
What a generous guy. Yeah, he's been so helpful. He really helped my brain doesn't necessarily think in all those ways. So he really helped me break it down, and we did diagrams and everything. He was fabulous.
He's very active on our Facebook discussion group. If you just go to Google and type in Garden Fork discussion group, it'll show up, or there'll be a link in the show notes here for that. And you can also read Scott's posts on medium.com. Go look for Cowboy Junkie. And it's J-U-N-K-I-E, cowboy, and then J-U-N-K-I-E, I'm pretty sure. So a link to that. But yeah. Hey, real quick, everyone. If you do any online shopping at Amazon, would you consider checking out the Garden Fork shopping page store thing directly on Amazon? It's our own page in Amazon with interesting stuff that I think might be useful. It's stuff that I have bought. If you just want to go to amazon.com/shop/gardenfork, that takes you to our page, and anything that you buy there, we do get a finder's fee for, and anything that you subsequently purchase during your shopping experience on the site, we get a finder's fee for. But that's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. It's kind of the DIY gizmo stuff that I've bought and I like, and I have little comments about each product there as well. So let me know what you think. Amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. Thanks. So real quick, before you have to go to work here, I noticed that you were planting amaranth, which is I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, I plant the amaranth that sort of looks like dreadlocks, that kind of flops over. I mean, yep. There's all sorts of kinds of amaranth, but I love that one. I grew it a couple of years ago and put it in bouquets, and every person who saw those bouquets is, oh my gosh, what is that flower? It's a very cool plant, and of course it's a grain, ancient. I think it's an ancient grain,
it
actually.
Is.
I growing it this year in both the sort of the lime green color and what they call a coral color. It's sort of a pinky reddish color. So hopefully that grows well. I really have no idea how everything is going to come together this year. It's going to be a real interesting thing. And I'm growing the amaranth as an ornamental, because in the garden I have four small beds that I'm using as cutting flower beds. I'm very reluctant to cut flowers out of my garden. I think that's a personality flaw, but it's typical with gardeners, actually. So I thought if I had some cutting flower beds, I would be more likely to feel fine cutting from those. But also, I think that shot of color in the vegetable garden is going to be very pretty, and I think it'll help bring in pollinators for the vegetable garden.
I have a garden bed dedicated to sunflowers because the camera operator likes to use them as cut flowers in the house. So In New York City, cut sunflowers are really quite expensive.
So I bet they are.
I'm like, I'm going to grow these things.
Well, you could start a little side business. Sell them outside your house.
And we have a video about whether you can transplant sunflowers or not. I think that's coming out soon. I have to double check that. But
I bet I know the answer.
Well, let's not spoil it. Let's create a curiosity, a desire for people to watch more Garden Fork videos.
Big I won't hint. Spoil it, but I know which way I'm betting.
All right. Anything else interesting going on, or do you need to hop on?
There's not, you know, I mean, it's a fabulous time in the garden right now. Things are really... It's amazing to me how quickly everything changes. We've had a ton of rain, which has been a real challenge from the weed standpoint here. But I have just been enjoying. I was telling you before we started recording that I've got hummingbirds all over the place because I planted this little vermilionaire kufia, which has these tiny little tubular orange flowers right next to our patio this year. I grew it in pots last year and noticed that there were hummingbirds at it all the time. This year I planted probably 15 of them right by the patio. And we sit out there and we have, you know, we enjoy time out there and we just watch the hummingbirds come and it's wonderful. And I am really enjoying this time in the garden, even though there's a lot of places in the garden here that need a lot of work yet. My current weed, most wanted weed right now is chickweed.
Yeah.
Which grows, I can't believe how quickly that stuff grows. And it just forms this enormous mat, but it's all about, it's over a foot long, tall, whatever direction it flops. So what I'm doing is I'm actually going around with a garden fork, ironically, going around with my garden fork and sticking that in and popping it up and just pulling out huge chunks of it. And then immediately mulching, because I find that if I skip even one day, you know, let one day go between when I weed and when I mulch, it's already starting again. See, the mulch seems to, if I can pull it out and get the mulch on there right away, it works well. So that's what I'm doing in my garden when I'm not over there working on the vegetable garden.
Oh, you mean your neighbor's vegetable plot?
Right.
Because your husband invited everybody.
The first time I find somebody in there picking my tomatoes, I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Hey.
Hi, how are you? Oh, I know he said you could come in here, but I feel like he was not right.
Yeah, there's that, you know, that neighbor thing where it's like, you know, the diplomacy between neighbors can be difficult.
It can be. Yes, it can be. Fortunately, we're pretty fortunate to have a good group of mostly laid back people around here. So, so we'll see. But I do hope that in the future I have. Such a plethora of produce that I can happily hand it out to whoever wants it in the neighborhood or beyond.
I have a neighbor who's actually a very good friend of mine, but he does not like it when I have sticks in my yard. And I'm like, I'm surrounded by trees. And he's like, Eric, the blight officer contacted me and was wondering about your yard.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, I'm here 36 hours on a weekend. You are more than welcome to pick up the sticks in my yard.
I think that's the appropriate reply to that. We did have a situation a couple of years ago where we were gone a whole bunch in summer and it had rained and sun and whatever. And the lawn had gotten quite long. And the neighbor's like, your lawnmower broken? I'm like, nope, we're getting to it. Just hang in there. You want me to
I'd be like, yeah, do you have a minute you could hit that with yours?
Well, that was the next. He said, do you need some help with that? Or I'm like, oh, that's really kind of you to offer. And then I sort of feel like, you know, I am one of those people who it's like, oh, it bothers you. Now I might just wait an extra day. Just because you were bold enough to tell me my lawn needed to be cut. So, no, we do love our neighbors, especially if any of them listen.
And we love everyone that listens to Garden Fork. So,
yeah. Do you have any reviews or any new reviews?
Oh, you're going to require me to use my brain. Hold on. Let me see on the iTunes, Garden Fork Radio iTunes page. Here, fill some time while I search for this.
Oh, my gosh. I am not good at filling time.
Okay. Well, I'm clicking on the Garden Fork Radio search, and it's taking for... I don't want this. I want... Apple keeps changing their software, and it makes me a cranky guy.
Yeah, there's a lot of software changes happening right now that are a challenge.
I'm like, why did you do that? Okay, ratings and reviews. Most recent review is May 27th, Everyone, S.J. Walton. I've been listening to Garden Fork for years. Eric's down to earth and down to in the earth when he's gardening. Topics and advice are always worth a listen, whether he's talking about home repair, DIY maker projects, who doesn't want a pizza oven, cooking, gardening, beekeeping, maple syrup, and the occasional technology geek out. His regular co-host Rick is also a wealth of information. Just ask him about tomatoes and grow lights. Uh-oh. But wait, there's more. Eric also has guest co-hosts who share their experience on a variety of topics. You never know who's going to show up in the podcast. You'll never be disappointed. And if you don't learn something, you probably weren't paying attention. Boom.
Wow. There you go. That was a perfect review.
This week we have a grow light video. We took, I bought these LED shop lights at Costco, and I built a metal frame for them and made some new seed starter grow lights.
Yeah, that was very cool. I'm glad you did that video, even though you lost a part of it at one point.
Yes, well, the footage is interesting. The problem I realized it was more Eric trying to be cinematic about welding than about talking about grow lights, but what the heck.
That's all right.
All right. Thank you, everyone. I imagine you are at your destination now, because you were going to tell me whether you drive, listen in the morning in your car. So just let me know. All right. Would you email me? radio@gardenfork.tv. Aaron, thank you. You can now go to work.
Thanks so much for releasing me.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com. Thank you.